Yonette.
ESPN 97.5, KFNC, Mont Bellevue, Houston. Brought to you by Zadda Jewelers. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back for the final hour of The Suspects. Two in the books, one to go. Final hour of the show. It is Barry, Nick, and Joel on a Thursday in the big city. We were talking about this whole Dateline, and if Barry and Nick were at a cliffside and taking a selfie and Barry fell to his death, if Nick would be suspect number one. And I said, the guy's name is Keith Morrison. And he's kind of like the
The lead singer of The Doors.
That's Jim. His brother, probably. Based on how old Keith looks. But if you don't know Keith, here's a sampling of Keith. And if you kind of just, in your mind, picture the whole scenario of Barry and Nick cliffside with one of them passing, and then you hear this narration, it's pretty good.
It still gets under the skin. It's raw. It still rankles 10 years on. After the event, which must have happened out here in the Utah desert, to Susan Powell. The story involving her and her husband Josh and her father-in-law Steve and her two little boys, all dead now. But the new evidence we have now is astonishing. The story of Susan Powell. Next Dateline. Don't watch alone.
Oh, Barry Laminack dead, and the story continues. Nick Sciarra, the
pusher. Well, that was way better than whatever you were doing at the end of the segment. I don't know.
Oh, shut up. I told you that he's got the voice, too, where he should be doing, like, voiceovers for children's stories. And the big bad bear came to the door.
Demetrius said he does look like Fire Marshal Bill.
Yeah. See?
I'm going to say no, but I see the resemblance a little bit. But Fire Marshal Bill
has great voiceover. He should be doing voiceovers forever.
Great pipe. Somebody said, I wonder if that was the same cliff Tom Brady fell off of last year.
Well, in Tampa, they hope not.
That is outstanding text, sir. I don't know who sent that, but you win text of the week. That was pretty damn good.
But Nick and I don't get to vote. You get just to decide who gets text of the week? Jeez.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I guess so. That's just because how many times have you said text of the week? Never. That's
well, because we're supposed to leave the text to you. So yeah. There you go.
Well, I mean, I told you can do the text. If you want to do the text line, take it. Somebody's got to do it.
Okay.
I get to announce text of the week tomorrow.
No. No.
You're going to be on the show tomorrow?
No, I'm not. I am going to be right, chilling, kicking back, listening to you guys. Bitch,
it's an FBF Friday where Nick goes, F that. I'm not going in today. Starting chilling. My weekend early, cowboy.
Are you working the weekend, Nick?
Sundays is my day. Sunday mornings. I produce your boy Jerome and Lauren and Rachel.
So do you guys, are you set now where you're always Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday?
That for now, through the pandemic, at least for the foreseeable future, yeah.
Because I thought it was on like a weird rotating thing where it was like every other day. So some days you do Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and then you do like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. But it's just your set schedule is Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday.
Yeah, they're trying to keep it as consistent as possible. Yep.
How do they connect? Do they connect like we connect for the Sunday show?
No, Jerome and Rachel does, Lauren just kind of calls in and then,
over the phone.
Yeah. They've done it over the phone before where Jerome, one person's on, you know, connected and the other two are not. Last time it was Jerome and Rachel that was connected and then Lauren was on the phone and then they had like a little Zoom thing. So all you weirdos can tune in and check them out dancing.
Check
and
out
being
Lauren.
Dumb and having
they
fun.
Dance?
Yeah.
Oh, Jerome, huh? Everybody's tuning in to check out Jerome dance?
No, that's a negative. No one's checking out Jerome dance. That would be 0%.
Just curious how that was going down.
Well, now you know the rest of the story, Barry. You feel better now?
Nope.
Good. Glad we got that figured out. So you see that Larry Bird came out and someone finally caught up with him about the whole shaking hands after the games and stuff like that. And he said he was on a podcast with Mitch Lawrence. And he said, I didn't shake hands when we lost to the Lakers. I never shook hands. When the Lakers and Celtics played, we didn't shake hands. When I first got to play against Magic, there was a hate factor there. It was more than just dislike. So there was no shaking of hands. So obviously back in the day, as Mikhail expressed to us earlier in the week, it was a totally different ball game in terms of that shouldn't have been a big deal.
You're speaking of the non-handshake complaints of Michael Jordan and the Bulls from the Last Dance documentary when they said Isaiah and those guys didn't shake their hands, just in case people weren't tuning into it.
Right.
So what it sounds like is MJ and the Bulls kind of crybabies? Kind of whiny?
You know what? A little sensitive? I started to feel that more and more. The more that I think about after shows that we have and after watching the first four episodes and, of course, them all saying, look, if these guys didn't react on every missed foul or every hard foul or everything and whine and all this stuff, it really seems like more so than when we lived through it when in real time that they were kind of little bitches that cried all the time.
Mm-hmm. Kind of feels that way.
I'm with you on that, yeah.
Like, they didn't shake our hand, and then now everybody from that era is going, we didn't shake hands. We hated each other. I'm not shaking hands if I hate you. You just beat me. Go bleep yourself. I'm not shaking your hand. I'm not happy you beat me.
Now, the other thing that's going to come out in episode 5 that I had mentioned to you was a thing. MJ may not have hated Clyde like he hated Isaiah, but he did not care for Clyde a whole lot. And he hated the fact that Clyde was constantly being compared to him. And that's going to come out in this episode 5 because it also almost came out for Clyde the same way it came out for Isaiah on the Dream Team. Because Clyde ended up being the alternate that was being considered along with Isaiah and maybe one other player. And then Clyde ended up being selected as the final member of the Dream Team. And there were a lot
of people. Which is crazy if he's the final selection. What are they doing?
Well, because Christian Laettner was on there, which was just a complete, absolute, unnecessary move where they said they had to have one college player. No, you didn't really, okay?
No, somebody made that up.
Yeah, but at the same time, I was in Portland working for the Blazers when Clyde was up for this final spot. And seeing how that all played out and him getting it, but then talking to people after the fact, there was a real discussion of the hatred MJ had for Clyde, too. He hated the fact that, because remember now, we didn't have NBA TV and we didn't have all these games on national TV. So Clyde playing in Portland, playing the late game on the West Coast, no one really saw Clyde. They just opened the newspaper the next day and knew this dude's killing it.
Yeah, but then you'd go all for 25 or whatever, yeah.
And then the comparison started coming out. And then both teams were good. And then people started calling Clyde the Jordan of the West. And, you know, him and Michael were battling for who was the best player in the league. And it chapped Michael's ass. And that's going to come out in episode 5 because that was a real, real deal. Michael, anything like that, you talk about me and you being competitive. But anything like that, and then, of course, Scotty jumped on with Michael. And then they were trying to get guys on board the same way all these people lined up against Isaiah. There was a building kind of a dislike for Clyde in some of those circles, too.
I could see it just because of the competitiveness, but it's weird when you see one team from the era, which kind of ushered in a new era, didn't kind of fall in line with the others, right? You're right, Clyde being out there on the West Coast, I think a lot of people missed his greatness. You knew he was good, but like you said, he was just a box score a lot of times. And until he played on a primetime game, and then it was just a one-time thing. It was just an anomaly almost. You would get a few highlights, you know, he would have some dunks. But you think if Clyde played on the East Coast, his star factor would have been higher?
No doubt. Absolutely. Let me just say, from living through pretty much the best years of his career when I worked for the Blazers, and I can't tell you how many times the next day when we got the super beta footage, the game tapes back, that we would go in the back room and slow-mo. Like, I remember in particular, there was one dunk where, you know, we talk about Vince Carter and some of these guys. Clyde took off against Isaiah and the Pistons and literally put his entire junk on Isaiah's forehead on a dunk. And we must have freeze-framed it and ran it back 100 times going, look how high he got before he even decided it was time to throw it through the rim. I mean, the highlight film material that he gave the fans every night that most of the nation missed was just spectacular. Yeah, I totally think that if he played in the East, that there would be a whole new respect for Clyde's game and where it was for a good period of time when he played in Portland.
Wow. I'm going to have to go look at some highlights now.
I'll have to see if I can find some of them, because some of the ones that we had, man, that we had a whole, obviously in Portland, we had a whole highlight reel that we would just keep adding to. And he was just ridiculous with the things he could do in the air with the ball.
Well, I'm sure somebody is. Yeah, I just got on YouTube and just typed in Clyde Drexler highlights. So I'm sure there's – now, the first one is from Houston. That's not even – oh, that's a good pass.
Just put Clyde over Isaiah. Let's see what
do
pops
I,
up.
Oh,
I bet you, put
yeah,
Clyde
yeah.
over Isaiah, and I bet you that dunk pops up.
Okay, Clyde Drexler, Isaiah, oh, dunk on Isaiah Thomas. Yeah, yeah. It's on there. Google that.
Yeah.
Oh man!
Did you
How
see
does
it?
That taste.
I mean,
oh boy! Teabagged him on the way down, no less.
Yeah. Yeah. When you look at it, and you
Chuck Daly covered
Raven.
His head like, "Oh my God, he just molested my player." That,
and it was
I'm filing
in Detroit.
Charges. I am.
There was also one in Portland. There was one in Portland, but this is in the '90 finals, the 1990 finals. He takes off from the dotted line. And just absolutely just puts Isaiah to bed. Mm. So check out some of Clyde's highlights if you get a chance to really, you know, completely appreciate how damn good he was. We'll continue to roll on. Much more of the suspects coming up in the final hour of the show right here on ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back rolling through the final hour of Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. At Pac-Man Joel, I just put out the top 10 Clyde Drexler dunks. I don't think they're in the right order, but if you just look at some of the guys he posterized just in those 10 dunks alone, you don't know what you were missing. I know Jordan was at a different level, but Clyde was pretty damn good back in the day. So check that out if you get a chance, because there are some sweet highlights that will take you in a hurry if you start watching some of that stuff. So it's good. Also, on the whole, there was more context to what we talked about yesterday in terms of that whole Dream Team scenario. Obviously, Rod Thorne came out yesterday and said Michael never had any conversations with him or said anything about keeping Isaiah off the team. And then you and I, Barry, talked about all the different guys that lined up and potentially could have lined up against him, Karl Malone and others. One of his best friends growing up happened to be the guy that, if you read, I think it's in Magic's book, and also Jay Williams was talking about it on ESPN this morning, that there was more truth than even what we talked about yesterday in terms of Magic not wanting Isaiah on the squad, and said that his agent, Lon Rosen, came to Magic and said, look, there's an undercurrent out there that you might be bisexual and a lot more involving you and your wife and a bunch of other stuff, and it looks like it's all coming from Isaiah. And with that,
Isaiah was just a hater, bro, right? It feels
man,
like he was just...
That's what I said, man. I think that obviously a lot of time has passed, but it wasn't just the bad boy Pistons reputation and walking off the floor. There were a lot of people that had a lot of hatred for Isaiah Thomas.
It appears as such. It's I always felt like, because I, you know, we didn't have the internet growing up watching all this. We didn't have the internet to see Clyde highlights. You relied on ESPN, or you actually a lot of the time you relied on your local news. Like I would see Clyde Drexler dunks on Sports Sunday with Craig Roberts or something like
or
that.
Or you hope
that
the
you had to watch inside
national
stuff.
Games on Saturdays in the afternoon would have a This Week in the NBA or something where they might give you some video highlights.
Yeah, or you'd have to watch inside stuff with Ahmad Rashad or something like that. You, in order to get all that, you didn't have the access to the data we have now. So you would see Isaiah Thomas and his smile and his, you know, all shucks. He's the little guy out there scrapping it with the big guys, and look at the heart he shows. And you'd see Magic and his smile, and Bird and his scowl, and Jordan and the – and so you drew conclusions just based off of that. And I always thought Isaiah was a good guy. I always thought, oh, you know, look at that little dude out there with all those big boys, and he's holding his own. Good for him. He seems like such a nice guy with his smile. And, well, apparently he was a jerk.
Yeah, there's a lot of evidence to support that. So, I mean, obviously you're bitter and you wanted to be on that dream team, but – you know, depending on, you know, the bridges you burn, and I'm sure you're running USA Basketball, you're putting together a dream team, and you hear, well, let's see, Magic and or Jordan and or Malone and a couple other guys may not play on this team if we take Isaiah. So do we take Isaiah and lose those guys, or take all those guys and worry about just replacing Isaiah? Pretty easy choice, right?
Oh, for sure.
Some of the other feedback coming back, Cleveland.com caught up with members of the Cavs. And we're asked about Ron Harper's comments in the last episode that just aired last weekend about the fact that he voluntarily wanted to guard Michael on that infamous game-winning, series-winning shot against the Cavs. And when Lenny Wilkins didn't let him, he basically said, F this MF, and he was out.
Yep.
Elo, Mark Price, they went completely over different, the whole thing, scenarios otherwise. No one remembers him saying it. No one knows if he actually did. And, of course, what you can tell from this team is, of all the guys, Hot Rod Williams has now passed away, but they had him, they had Brad Daugherty, they had a really good team. And they were all still covering for each other, including Ron Harper, going, now, he may have pulled Lenny Wilkins to the side, and we never heard it. But, to be honest, there were guys on the team like Hot Rod Williams that if he was still alive and they heard something like that, he'd have called them out on it. And he'd also said, tell us when you said it because no one heard it. And the fact that the question that I have is, how does history change if that Cavaliers, if that shot doesn't go in, if the Cavs end up beating the Bulls? Because they were a damn good team, and you could tell by this interview how tight they were. That Cavs team had the ability to do some damage too, that maybe they could have been known a lot more and recognized a lot more.
Yep. It's funny, right? Said, I mean,
no, go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, they said you could say the same thing about Utah, you feel like, with some of the things that happened to them.
Sure.
How good would they be if they didn't have some of those heartbreaking losses that they suffered? But, you know.
Seattle.
Reggie Miller and the Pacers. I mean, there were several
that
you thought.
Really strong championship caliber teams that were just consistently turned away by how good the Bulls were. But, you know, you look at just how history was written now, and you go back and say, you know, a win here, or, you know, again, the Jordan shot against Brian Russell and the Jazz. I mean, there's several different instances where you could go back and say how history could have changed a little bit because of who was there. And then they said, like, you know, Elo and those guys were saying, and then you forget Harper was like he was a go-to guy. He was a superstar when he was with the Cavs. And then after that, he joined the Bulls and got three rings, and they said he changed a whole lot when he got three rings. He was a lot cockier.
Oh,
yeah, he's come forth with a lot more than he ever did when he was playing for the Cavs. So I was just reading it this morning going, man, you know what? You forget what a solid top-to-bottom team that Cavaliers team was. And as you mentioned, several other teams were like that. Utah, you hated them, obviously, as a Rockets fan. I worked for the Blazers back then. We hated them, too. But guess what? You couldn't argue the fact they were loaded.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, Seattle, boy, I don't know who I hated more growing up, or just as a Rockets fan, going from the first games I can remember in 80 till, you know, recently. But I don't know who I hated more, Seattle, the Celtics, or the Jazz. Those three teams, I didn't really hate the Lakers. Showtime was fun. It was, you know, whatever, but I hated Seattle. Oh my gosh, I hated them so much. I hated Utah and I hated the Celtics as a Rockets fan. And I mean, but those are, you know, two of those teams really never got over the hump. But you just wonder, man, if things break right, what could Stockton and Malone have done as a tandem? And they were still, they would give people fits, but they never could quite get over the hump. There was always somebody a little bit better, and it's crazy.
Go back, and the greatest sign of how good a team like that was their role players, because you knew who the superstars were. As you mentioned, Seattle, you mentioned Stockton and Malone, and Seattle had Payton and Sean Kemp and guys like that. But when you start looking at the role players, you had Dale Ellis, you had Detlef Schrempf, you had the defender in Nate McMillan, you had Sam Perkins, you had all the you could just keep on going and going. Man, a lot of those guys ended up being like all-stars and great players with other teams. Or Dale Ellis won a three-point championship. You know, Nate McMillan was your stopper. Or you go to Utah and say, Hornacek. You know, Mark Eaton. You know, guys like that don't get enough credit. But man, oh man, when they played, Tyrone Corbin, guys like that, they did their job. And that's why the teams were so damn good.
Yep. Yeah, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe you guys can correct me, but it feels like that maybe there was less parity back then, that the teams at the top were really good and they would always just fight. And that's why there was kind of that rotation of Lakers and Celtics for years. And, you know, Rockets snuck in there a couple times but never ended up winning until the 90s. But it just felt like it was more top-heavy than even now. And maybe I'm wrong on that, but I feel like there's more parity in the league now than there was back then, because I think the difference between a Bulls team or even a Jazz team – wasn't that significant in talent. It was the little things or the intangibles or just having a Michael Jordan and nobody else had that. But then you would go from that Utah team to whoever was at the bottom of the NBA at that time, and I felt like it was significantly the gap, or maybe even who the first team out of the playoffs back then, the gap was significantly
like
higher.
Forget the top heavy for a second, Barry. Take it on the bottom half. Where would you have seen a team like the Nuggets as an 8 seed come in and beat a 1 seed like that Seattle team? Mm-hmm. I mean, 8 seeds these days don't come close to having the talent and the ability that they did back then. So,
yeah, that's a great point.
Food for thought to think about as we roll through. We got a half hour to go on the show. We're going to turn it over to the Blitz at 4. They're going to take you till 7, but we've got 30 minutes on the clock when we come back. It's the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
This is the Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Final half hour of the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Been extremely sportsy on a tough-to-be-sportsy edition of the Suspects, as we covered a lot of ground, a lot of sports.
Yes, yeah, stick to sports, guys. Should be thrilled. We have covered a lot of sports. By the way, I had to give props to Aussie Matt. He sent a pretty hilarious tweet when we were talking about Andy Dalton earlier, and I didn't get to it. Mm-hmm. But he said, "Barry, mate, Andy Dalton is good, but he ain't no Karl Malone." That is well done, Aussie Matt. Well done indeed. And I do want to give props and congratulations to Suspect Joey. He said, "It's not sports related. Just wanted to share with my brothers, you all. I'm about to sign my first home. Hope all is well. Peace." Dude, congrats. That is a really cool thing and a big deal, and congratulations to you.
Yep, always a big jump to do something like that, but congrats to you. And keep and shout out to Dre, by the way, Dr. Dre on 290, always the loyalist of loyal suspects. And we're talking about that Seattle team, and we just rattled off a few, but when you start bringing up other
X-Man
names like Kendall Gill and Xavier McDaniel.
Oh,
and,
boy.
Woo! Seattle
Kendall
was
Gill.
Loaded.
Wow. Yeah, man. Kendall Gill was one of those cats that it seemed like he could jump out of the gym.
So, Kendall Gill story real quick, too. He's on the Nets later on in his career, and they're playing Rodman the following night. And he says he knows one of the strippers at, I think it was Scores. And so he's in there. Rodman's in there. A bunch of the players that are going to be in the game the next day are in there. He bows out at 12:30, said he had to get his rest and whatever, and tells the stripper that he knows, "Call me in the morning." So he goes through shoot around and he calls her and he says, what time did Rodman leave? He said, she said, probably between 4 and 5 a.m. So he gets back to the building pregame and starts telling the fellas, hey, give Rodman the business tonight. Ain't no way he's going to be able to play because he was at the strip club till 5 and he was partying it up. And so he ain't going to be a problem. He said the dude went for 20 boards in the game that night. Like, he's just, you know, you take that with the story that they talked about in the documentary about, like, the, what do they call it, the Indian drill, where you took him 4 laps to try and catch him. He just, he's just a rare, rare human being that just has the energy at all times. I told you guys, when the Rockets used to play this person, I went into the locker room. That's no lie. He'd play like 35 plus 40 minutes a game. And if you wanted to find Rodman, not that he'd talk, he'd be in the weight room for like 90 minutes busting his ass. It's just crazy how much energy that guy has.
Yeah, that's wild. Some people are just gifted like that, though. Nothing bothers them. They can, you know, I happen to be like that. I'm one of those athletes that I don't need to. All right.
Okay, never mind. I'm just going to let you finish that however you will and see how that turns out. I don't know if you caught this or not, but so and I want to see the whole interview, but Bryant Gumbel actually got Mike Breen, Jim Nantz, and Joe Buck to sit down and have a roundtable discussion about all the impact of sports being shut down and what it's going to look like when we get out of this mess. And Bryant Gumbel, there were some interesting comments, but Bryant Gumbel said, let's say that the NBA decides, okay, we're back in business on such and such a day. Could you envision them going back to you and you saying, nah, I don't think so. I'm out. Breen said, initially for us in the NBA, I think a lot of the broadcast teams, if this resumes, are going to be calling games from a studio, not even in the same building as the game being played. That's going to be bizarre.
I could totally see that, Joel. Well, I mean, they kind of do that already for some sports in some cases.
Glenn Davis does it all the time. Yeah, Glenn Davis did it for the World Cup. He was calling games from a studio in the United States when the World Cup was overseas.
Yeah, so I don't – it doesn't strike me as completely odd. Of course it's different. Of course it's not what we're used to. But it seems like there's – at least until this is all over with – that might be the new norm. I mean, it might be one of those, hey, whatever bodies don't have to be in this arena, but we can still have sports, that's what it's going to be like.
Now, let me ask
you
this. You
know who's going to love this the most? Let me tell you who's going to love this the most when sports gets back. It's not going to be the fans, and it's not going to be the announcers. It's going to be the players, and it's not going to be because sports is back. Guess who's not going to be allowed in the locker room? Media. No post game.
That's true.
They may have to answer questions over Zoom. But that'll be the normal press conference, not the at the locker. Hey, what happened? Hey, you did this, you did that. It's going to be at Zoom, and you can just be like, I didn't hear the question next. Like, it's going to be completely different for them. They're going to love it.
Now, where are you going to be on this? So the discussion continues, and they asked Joe Buck, my favorite guy, about, you know, going forward and doing games and things like that. And he says, Fox is optimistic about something getting on the air. And I think doing a big NFL game or doing a big NBA game and a big basket is made and you hear no reaction from the crowd. For those of us who call play-by-play, that is daunting and scary. So what I think they're going to do is inject fake crowd noise and past crowd noise to give a little bit of support. That, to me, is way more preferable, way more appetizing than just having no, just being it flat under broadcast. I disagree. Because I think the fans are being force-fed a fake product then. You understand going in. Look, it's not like lack of ticket sales. There's no fans in the building. But don't try and pull one over on me and give me fake crowd noise. I think the crowd's better than that.
The only reason I would want that is if there was the opportunity for a mix-up. Like if somebody, nothing happens and then one of the interns hits the wrong button. And it's a, ooh, and like literally nothing is happening. That might be great. But I'm with you. This is why I don't do comedy over Zoom. Like I've been asked to do shows. I don't want a laugh track. I don't want somebody adding laughter to my jokes. If there's no crowd, There's no crowd, and that's why I'm opposed to it. And I'm with you. I just let me watch the game. Don't try to enhance it to the point where you're faking it, because at some point they're going to get hip to the fact that, hey, you know what? If we just position the cameras right at the Toyota Center, and we don't show the fact that none of these fans show up until, you know, halftime, maybe we could just pipe in some crowd noise, keep the cameras low and tight, and no one will ever know, and then we'll just play the crowd noise and make it sound like it's packed.
I was going to say, it looks like any regular – if we don't have fans in the stands, it'll look like a regular season Rockets game at the Toyota Center anyway. But I think Tad Brown is on line one. He wants to talk to you after the show. He likes your idea. He's wondering if you could give him more details on how we could pull this off where he could get the game shown with crowd noise. Now, I will say this. This is very cool. They said for Premier League soccer games broadcast later this summer, the networks there are working on having an option on your remote control where they're going to do a back channel. So the main channel will have no sound of no, you know, pumped in crowd noise, none of that, and just what you see is what you get. And then if you want, you can switch over to another channel, and that's where they're going to have artificially enhanced atmosphere, crowd noise, big roars of the crowd on big plays, and things like that. Then at least you give the fans options, and they don't feel like you're right. Trying to pull one over on them. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I like that idea better.
Yeah, for sure. Because I was going to say, to your point, I've tried to watch some of Kimmel and the Tonight Show and some of these guys from home. And it's just made me feel for you a lot more going, you're absolutely right. I mean, I couldn't imagine trying to deliver a monologue or going on stage and not having any reaction and knowing how you're doing with anything from any of the jokes that they're telling.
Well, I will say, we kind of do that in radio, but the difference is we knew coming in, you're not going to get that feedback. So I know if I'm doing a bit or trying to be funny or whatever, I'm just having to rely on instinct. And it's kind of like what I talked about with Raheel last night. I'm just, at the end of the day, I'm just going to do what I think is funny and trust that other people are going to like it. Some aren't. Okay. But on stage, it's different. So I'm not, if you started adding a laugh track to radio, it would be awkward. But it's the same thing where if you started taking away crowds and comedy live on the stage, and just then it's weird, you know, it's for some reason. Now they pull it off in sitcoms where they'll add laugh tracks to the Big Bang Theory, and then The Office, there's no laugh track and you still think it's funny. So it's all in the nuance of it. But for me in sports, we're so used to and we're so ingrained in seeing and hearing the crowd. And the same thing in comedy. You watch a special, you see and hear the crowd. That's just part of the experience. And to fake it or not have it just seems – doesn't seem right. It just seems awkward or contrived.
Yeah, I would agree. Because, like, look, and I think some are better than others of just doing their monologue without crowd noise. I think that Jimmy Fallon has failed miserably, and you could tell he feels uncomfortable. Whereas Kimmel is really good about just kind of pressing on, carrying through. I think probably mentally he's thinking about there being crowd reactions and just pressing on to his timing into the next joke. But boy, Kimmel struggles, man. I mean, not
well,
Kimmel,
Fallon. Let me tell you why that is, my theory at least, hearing you say that. And I don't watch either of them, so I can't speak to it. But to me, what it sounds like is that's the effect of the quality of writing. When the jokes are really good, you don't need a crowd in front of you to laugh to know the jokes are good. People at home are going to laugh. So it sounds like Jimmy Kimmel and his writers and his staff are producing better material than Jimmy Fallon, because Fallon goes up and does a monologue and everyone at home watching is like, ugh. If Kimmel does it and everyone's like, that was great. You know, maybe you laugh, maybe you don't, but it feels better. It feels natural. It that has a lot to do with the quality of writing and the quality of jokes that you're getting.
Okay. That makes sense. Nick, is the caller still on the line?
He is indeed. Daniel.
Daniel wants to talk about Dennis Rodman before we go to break. Daniel, what's up?
Hey, guys, I was listening to y'all. First-time caller, long-time listener, love the show. Appreciate you guys kind of hanging in there. And I can kind of sympathize with Rodman in the sense that during the shutdown, my sleep schedule has gotten way off track to where I'm staying up till 2 a.m. and sleeping until 10 a.m. And I'm just thinking for a guy like Rodman to stay in the strip club till 5, to go home and sleep for maybe 8-9 hours, and then to get up and have to play a game in 3-4 hours, he's probably going to be in, like, prime condition, as opposed to someone who got up super early with the kids and they've had a long day, and then at 7 o'clock they have tip off and they're playing a game until, you know, 10 p.m. at night, and they're probably exhausted by then.
That's a good point.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really good point. It's a different kind of life that you lead, right? Like, it's a different, if you work at night and you're out all night, well, guess what? That's like getting off at 5 and going to the bar and having a beer before you go home. What's the, you know, if he might be going to bed at 4 in the morning, but he don't have to be at work until 2 in the afternoon. So it is a big difference. That's a great point.
Yeah. And the thing is, we've talked about, you know, kind of the freaks of nature that some of these athletes are, and how Rodman was doing what he was doing. But look, I witnessed firsthand Charles Barkley, and I've told you this, that like the tradition before training camp started was that we would go to Vegas for like 5 days, and we wouldn't sleep, and we'd be drinking till all hours out of the night. And you know, he would order like the room service with the Lazy Susan, which had like 18 desserts and fries and burgers and all these different entrees and everything like that. And we'd sit there and watch, you know, and we'd all eat, and we'd all partake. And we're like, bro, you're going to be ready for camp? He's like, I'm good, man, I'm good. And then we'd watch him go through two-a-days. And in between two-a-days, he'd do suicides the length of the court for like a half hour at a time, and then sleep in the locker room between practices, go through two-a-days, do it all again, and lose like 20 pounds within like 2 weeks. And we're going, you're not supposed to be able to do that. But – he just was that kind. Was that kind of athlete. So
yeah, that's crazy.
There were a lot of unbelievable athletes, and there still are. So, all right, we'll continue to roll. We're going to put a bow on it next. Wrap it up. Turn it over to the Blitz. It's the Usual Suspects. ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back, final segment of The Usual Suspects on a Thursday in the big city. Tomorrow's an FBF Friday. Comedian of the Week coming, I assume, Barry, and lots of shenanigans.
Oh, yeah.
Do on a Friday. Nick, wish you'd be there, but of course you're going to be vacationing otherwise because you've already told us that, but we will miss you. I want to get this in here before we get out, but did you see with all the different – we talk about all the different reporters doing live shots from the house and, you know, like on their iPads and on their phones. This dude, Alfonso Merlos, was doing a live shot for a Spanish television station. The show or the network was called Estado de Alarma, or State of Alarm. It's a new, and he was doing a news report from his home. As Eagle Eye fans pointed out, there was a woman that was not his longtime girlfriend, Marta Lopez, a former star of Big Brother reality show, that walked by the shot half naked while he was on air. And he remained silent for days while accusations flew and questioned him, to where he finally had to come out and say, if you think that my attitude has not been correct or there are things that I have not done well, I have no problem asking for forgiveness. My goal was not to harm someone else. But the girlfriend claimed this was unpleasant and shameful, and that even though he said we were no longer dating at the time, she said, oh, yes, we were. And then... then they identified the partially clothed woman as another journalist, Alexia Rivas, who said she had been dating the newsman for several weeks. Busted, big guy.
Busted or congratulations?
Or both, if you see the choices. He's doing okay either way, but he may have upgraded, and I'm not going to blame him. I just retweeted it if you want to see it. But I've told you I've lived through something like this. I'm not going to call out names, and I'll just say someone that I know very well was doing an out-of-town broadcast and happened to be doing the same thing where they were in sight of cameras. And after an event, happened to be in clear view bouncing someone other than his wife on his knee and having a good old time. And by the time he got back home after said away broadcast, let's just say all of his stuff was put outside on the front lawn, and that was all she wrote. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do I know the person?
No, I don't think so. But I want to say that I was partially responsible, but had no idea because we were doing a post game show.
Really, Joel?
I'm going to explain it to you, Barry.
Responsible. But
the Rockets
no
broadcasts were my responsibility. We're doing a post game show, right? Our post game show shows everything going on courtside after the game because at the time, our announcers are obviously on camera. They were located right there in the front row on the court. So you get a very wide backdrop, okay? Had no idea at the time and really was only focused on our guys doing our post game and what we were going to do. And lo and behold, in the background of all those shots was where this was happening. So, in essence, I publicized without knowing it the fact that this dude was doing what he was doing. Or, you know, all of us as a whole.
I have heard stories of people in this market, not even in sports, although I've heard stories about it obviously in sports, but just news anchors who are absolute whores. And it's usually the men, although I think there's some women's stories that I've heard too, but it's usually the dudes who are using their status as an anchor on television to chase ass and be, disrespectful to his relationship with his significant other. And a lot of times they don't get busted.
But let me just say this too, and this all of this is being said before I even met Lisa. At being, you know, having as many friends as in the business, I can tell you it ain't just the guys. I knew plenty of females at stations that were taking full advantage of the fact that everybody knew who they were, and they liked to get out and party and have fun. And look, there were circles of broadcast people that would just. You know, regardless of radio, TV, or written word, you know, after games, you know where to meet, you know where to go, you know what spots to hit, and, you know, a lot of people were just getting out after it. There's no doubt about it. But, yeah, there's a lot of guys that aren't in this market anymore that definitely took advantage of who they were and how many times
people saw. It'd be crazy if, like, 740 had to do a news story because, you know, no one wants to hang out and bang anyone. Doing the news on 740 KTRH. That's just not a thing, right? But it'd be funny to be like, a rash of herpes has spread through the media market in Houston. Well, that's because they're all getting together after their shows and banging it out, apparently. Like, you're just saying everybody was just whoring, huh? Everybody was just like, it didn't matter.
I don't
want to
say
news
everybody,
or sports,
but
weather,
people
traffic.
That I know of were not staying home reading books after whatever they had to do during their job description.
People just at home watching the news, like, every channel, they all have fever blisters. What is going on in this town? A lot of banging, okay?
Not going that far, but...
well, I mean, sounds like y'all were all being whores back in the day.
First of all, now you're yelling.
But I have heard stories. Yeah.
By the way, as a single man, look, I'm not going to hide the fact. Look, I went out on weekends. I was going to go out and have fun. Yeah, I'm not denying that.
Tell the truth and be honest, and no one's going to judge you for it. Especially
no one's listening, I'm sure, either, right? Okay, go ahead.
No one's listening. How many times did you lead with, I work for the Rockets, to get ass? Honest to God.
Oh, no.
Don't think. No guy in here is not going to do that. Every guy in here is going to be like, yeah, I do. I'm director of
you don't lead with
Houston
it.
Exactly,
you never
Nicholas.
Lead with it.
Exactly.
You indirectly guide her. You force her to ask you about your occupation.
You lay the groundwork
enough.
Your own, and you see. And if you're if you're making
I'm saying,
groundwork.
You don't wait till date seven. I'm saying how much did you use it to get asked? Of course you don't do it in date seven. But in hour number three of a conversation, Yeah, you're gonna be like,
oh, I don't think it even got to hour number three.
We going back?
No, yeah, we don't have to. we didn't have to get to hour number three. This ain't the usual suspects, bro. We were in the Charlie Polillo show, and we were already
20 minutes
making
in.
Decisions. Okay. We were making business decisions at
that
hustle, point.
Joel. Like yeah, I said, no I'm not doubt. Knocking you. I respect the hustle. That's good.
Yeah, you know, townhouse near the building near downtown was one thing. But, yeah, There were other things that carried a lot of added incentives. Yeah.
So, I bet.
We'll leave it right there. Great way to end the show. Tomorrow's an FEF Friday. We appreciate you guys listening. And we want you guys to have a great night and join us again tomorrow. Before we sign off, we want to tell everybody, hey, hang in there. Keep doing what you're doing. And we are here for you. Every single day. So for Barry and Nick, I'm Joel. Have a great night, everybody. The Blitz is coming up next on ESPN 97.5.
And I didn't know if they sniffed their own farts or not. Yeah, boy.